Welcome to Extraordinary People. We're here to celebrate everyday people who are on a mission to change the world however they can. From working with survivors of domestic violence to building awareness of mental health issues, our guests each have their own unique approach to addressing challenges close to their hearts, making life better. Today, I'm talking to Karen Kipping. Karen and I met through the Dash Charity, a charity based in Maidenhead, which works and advocates for victims of domestic abuse. Karen has been working as an independent domestic violence advocate with Dash for over 14 years, is the author of Recognition to Recovery, How to Leave Your Abusive Ex Behind for Good, available on Amazon, and is also a divorce coach specialising in domestic abuse. So Karen, hello, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. So to begin with, could you explain for our listeners what a domestic violence advocate does?
Okay, so an IDVA for short is really the voice of the survivor. So when you've been in an abusive relationship, you tend to lose your voice, you lose your confidence, you doubt everything. And it can be really hard to articulate your situation and your experience to other people. So IDVAs support people that are in what we call high-risk abusive relationships. So they may still be in that relationship, or they may have separated and left that abusive person, or they may be dealing with abusive people within their extended family. So the IDVA really is there to offer practical help as well as emotional support. So they will help them understand the risk that they're at and that their children are at. They will go through a whole comprehensive safety plan with them to make sure that they are as safe as possible. In terms of practical help, they can link them up with legal advice. They will go to solicitor's appointments with them. They will support them every step of the way through civil court. So whether that's applying for divorce or for orders like injunctions, they will support them through criminal court if they have to go and give evidence against the person that's been abusive to them. They will arrange for things like screens and what we call special measures. They will liaise with other professionals like the police, social care, housing, health workers. And they've really got a whole network of professionals that they work alongside with to provide wraparound support to help that person. So they really are not on their own anymore. And with IDVA support, the risks really can reduce down very quickly. Within a matter of weeks, the situation can have completely turned around and become much more positive and much more safe. So that intervention is really vital if anybody is concerned about their risk. IDVAs are, you know, they are the bee's knees, if you like, when it comes to domestic abuse support. And best of all, they're free. You know, and it's all confidential. It being an IDVA was just one of the best decisions that I ever made in my life, to kind of learn and take on that role. They're amazing.
Sounds like a really rewarding job.
Yeah, it is. It is. And when you work in the field of domestic abuse, a lot of people say to me, oh, God, isn't your job depressing? And you must hear some awful things. And yes, we do. But what we can do is turn that around. We can make somebody's situation better. And, you know, we're not miracle workers, but there is a lot of support that we can give, a lot of help that people can receive. And that's the sad thing about domestic abuse, is that people don't realise that there is so much help available until they're in a crisis. So that is a sad thing, but we can do something to help.
The crime survey for England and Wales showed that in the year leading up to lockdown, 1.6 million women and 757,000 men had experienced domestic abuse, with a 7% growth in police-recorded domestic abuse crimes. Although there's limited official data so far, the Office for National Statistics report that in mid-May 2020, during lockdown, there was a 12% increase in the number of domestic abuse cases referred to victim support. Between April and June, there was a 65% increase in calls to the National Domestic Abuse Helpline when compared to the first 3 months of last year. This must have put a lot of weight on already stretched services. How have the Dash charity coped over the last 18 months?
It has been really difficult. It has been, you know, so difficult. And we have been stretched at times. It has been busier than we have ever known it. We've been around for 45 years and I've been there nearly 15 years. And I've never known it as busy as it has been since the pandemic. But we've adapted and, you know, thank goodness for our, you know, really professional and committed team, because they are so passionate about what they do and they are so flexible. So we have adapted our hours. We've started work earlier in the morning, finished late at night to make sure that we can stay in contact with people, that we can get them the help that they need when they call our helpline. We've taken more online inquiries and we always make sure that we get back to people as soon as we possibly can. And they are allocated a worker within 48 hours of that initial inquiry if they need that ongoing support. For people that have had to flee out of area, we have access to a national network of refuge space. So we've been able to find people emergency accommodation even during the first lockdown. And we've taken families into our own refuges as well during, you know, all of the lockdowns. So, we've just had to adapt. Our children's support has continued, but we've managed to do that virtually. We've managed to get donations of food and essentials out to people when they were struggling and they had no support network and, you know, they were isolating, so couldn't leave the home to go shopping and things like that. So, yeah, we are adaptable, if nothing, you know, and we're a really good team. So we help each other out and we lift each other up when things are difficult. So, it's been a steep learning curve. And it's been a challenge, but we've risen to it. And we've managed to support everybody that's come our way. It's been really difficult because we're all working from home. And before, when we were all together, you get to hear the calls, you get to hear what's going on in, with other people's caseloads, and you can support them much better. But that's really difficult when you're isolated yourself. And, you know, some of our workers haven't been well at certain times because of COVID, and, you know, they've been juggling homeschooling as well and things like that. So it's been tough. It has been tough, but we've learned a lot as well. And, you know, they're also passionate, bless them. And they do such fantastic work. And when you hear the good things that have happened and the difference that it's made, it kind of makes it all worth it.
Just brilliant what you do. Last year, the government announced they were giving £8.1 million of funding to provide life-saving support for domestic support survivors. In your view, has this made a difference on the front line?
What it's done is it's allowed us to continue some of our services throughout the pandemic, because all domestic abuse charities are charitable, so they are heavily reliant on funding. And that's why our services do change from time to time. And sometimes our support groups run and then they don't run for a bit, or, you know, we get funding for a specific type of client or a specific group of people. But we try to meet the needs of everybody that needs our help. And what that funding did was it just allowed us to continue some of those services, and it gave us a buffer, because the 2 years previous to the pandemic had been so difficult that we were in a deficit and we were faced with some really difficult choices. So in some ways, as horrible as it is to say it, the pandemic kind of saved us a little bit. But of course, now that money, that extra COVID money, is dwindling again and it's not going to be there forever. So now we're already starting to worry about, you know, what's going to happen for the rest of this year and the year after. You know, things like our helpline are not funded. They're unfunded. So that comes out of what we call our unrestricted money and our reserves, which puts the long-term sustainability of the charity at risk. So, yeah, we're constantly looking at fundraising and how we can sustain services.
Do you think now that the government seems to have recognised the severity of the problem, especially off the back of COVID, that they will do more to help fund? Or do you think that ship has sailed, it was top of their agenda last year, and now they're going to be on to whatever the next thing is?
Oh, God, I hope so. I hope it's really got on their radar. You know, we've got the Domestic Abuse Act, which is coming in this year, which has shown that they have recognised some of the challenges that are coming, and they are trying to do things differently and trying to make a difference with the way that they respond to domestic abuse. But historically, the way that it's been looked at from government is so short-sighted. You know, we do all the picking up the pieces all the time. There's such a lack of early intervention. You know, we need more work in schools. We need more severe penalties, you know, in terms of criminal justice. It has such a knock-on effect across the UK with criminal justice, with health services, with mental health services, with, you know, education, with employment, that it just, I can't remember the exact figure, but it's literally billions of pounds it costs this country. So we need to think differently. We've got to do things differently, and we need more sustainable funding. If we had more sustainable funding for specialist domestic abuse services, it would make such a difference. It would make a massive difference to the way that people's lives are and the way that our communities are.
And I know that the Dash charity was looking at sustainable fundraising. Was there anything that worked well for you? Are there any ideas that if you had the funding that you could actually kick something off that would really make a difference to you?
If we didn't have to spend all the hours in the day that we have to spend looking at different ways to bring in money, we could actually do more work. So, you know, for instance, our fundraising team is very small. We are a small charity, but we support hundreds of people every year. And when you look at cost effectiveness, the amount of money that we have to spend, you know, on fundraisers and the time that they spend looking at different ways to bring in money, that money would be better spent, surely, on helping people that actually need our help. You know, we could employ those two people to actually support more people instead of looking at ways to bring money in. I mean, that's just, it just seems crazy to me. It's just the wrong way of working, but we have to do it because that's the only way that we can bring the money in. It's just really difficult situation. If I was Prime Minister, I would run it completely differently.
What are the biggest obstacles for a victim of abuse to overcome to reach out for help? Are there any common factors, for example, that people tend to come forward with the support of family or friends? Or is there, I think you've talked about crises, is there a critical moment when something's happened which forces them to seek help?
It's difficult to say because everybody's situation is slightly different. And for some people, it will take them 5 years before they leave that abusive relationship. For other people, it might take them 20 years before they leave that abusive relationship. And unfortunately, some people never leave. For some people, it is an incident that happens. You know, maybe it is that first time you're hit, or maybe it's a more severe assault than the previous one, or maybe it's the fact that the kids have seen it this time, or, you know, that the kids are actually starting to be physically abused. That, you know, it becomes more real for somebody. You know, sometimes people will say, well, I could manage it while he was hitting me, but when he started on the kids, that I knew something had to change. Or for the other people, it's maybe not even about the physical abuse, it's just a slow realisation that things are not right. You know, something feels wrong. You know, I don't understand why I'm being criticised all the time. you know, I can tell my confidence has just disappeared. I just feel like a shell of myself. You know, I'm not happy. And maybe they start to read something or they start to talk to somebody, a friend or a family member, who starts to open up their mind a little bit, who starts to say, you know, well, I don't think that that's right. And, you know, I've seen the way that you've been treated. I don't think that that's acceptable. You know, I've noticed that you don't seem yourself recently, and starts to kind of get them questioning reality. And then they get their light bulb moment, as we call it. You know, the penny drops and they suddenly go, ah, so I am right. You know, how I feel is justified, right? And so they might pick up the phone to the helpline and they might say, you know, I'm in a relationship and, you know, this is what's happening to me. And we ask them a very specific set of questions to kind of tease out some of those behaviours and make it easier for them. And then it does become real, you know. It's quite hard, especially if it's not physically abusive, it's quite hard to describe domestic abuse and controlling behaviour to somebody. You know, if you say, oh, my partner's criticising me all the time, if you said that to a friend, the friend might say, oh, well, maybe, you know, maybe you're kind of being a bit sensitive, or maybe you should try harder, or maybe don't make such a drama out of it, it's not that bad. But if you put those criticisms together day in, day out, as well as bullying behaviour, as well as not having access to your own money, as well as, you know, jealousy and being isolated from everybody around you, you know, that's a whole pattern of behaviour. And that really affects how somebody feels about themselves. And that is abusive.
For anyone listening who thinks a friend or family member might be in an abusive situation, what would your advice be?
Try not to distance yourself or to back off from them, if possible. It can be really frustrating when you can see that somebody's in an abusive relationship and maybe you've been trying to help them before and they're not taking you up on that, or they may be dismissing the worries that you've got. But keep in touch with them. Keep checking in on them. Keep challenging how they think as well. So if they're trying to minimise it down and say, oh, it's not that bad, or, you know, make excuses for that behaviour, keep challenging them on it. Keep reassuring them that actually they don't have to put up with that. Maybe start to have a conversation about what life might be like if they weren't in that abusive relationship, you know, because when you are in an abusive relationship, your confidence is very low. And they've probably been told that they can't cope on their own, that they'll be no good, you know, without their partner, that nobody's going to believe them, all those kind of things. So you have to kind of get them over that and reassure them that people will believe them, that there is help out there, that they don't have to put up with it. And anything that you can do to rebuild that confidence in themselves is really good. So keep inviting them to things, even if you think they're just going to turn you down anyway, they're going to make excuses as to why they can't go, just keep inviting them, keep them in the loop, keep encouraging them, keep building their confidence, and maybe one day they will get to that point where they go, do you know what, enough's enough, and actually I know that this friend understands, I know they get it, and they might reach out to you at that point. You've just got to keep that connection there.
Is there a point early on in an abusive relationship where somebody might think, hang on, this isn't right, and then doesn't do anything, and then it goes, you know, you talked about the 5 years, 20 years to leave somebody. Is there a point earlier when somebody might recognise it? And do you often get people coming to Dash Charity who are in that early stage and they're kind of catching it early?
Yeah. So they might see some of the what we call red flags or the warning signs of abusive or controlling behaviour early on in the relationship. So maybe they've just got a general feeling that something's not quite right. Maybe that, you know, their partner's trying to rush it. You know, they've only been together for a couple of months and all of a sudden they want to move in together, or they want to get engaged, and, you know, they're telling them all these things that, you know, they just want to be together all the time. And, you know, they recognise that their partner is putting them down or criticising them, and it just doesn't feel comfortable. So they may call the helpline and say, is this, am I right to be worried about this? You know, they may even be worried about their partner's previous relationship history. So they may be worried that their partner has been abusive beforehand, and they just want that reassurance or that validation about, you know, about what they're worried about. So they might ask for what we call a Clare's Law application. So that's where you can go to the police and you can ask them, you know, have you got any history with my partner? You know, have they been abusive towards somebody else in the past? Have they got any convictions for abusive behaviour? Because something doesn't feel right. You know, I'm concerned. And so you can put in that application to the police and they will check their records to see if they have got any convictions or history. And if they have, they will tell you. And for some people, that gives them that validation, that reassurance, and they go, right, I knew I was right. That's it, I'm gone. I'm out of here, you know. But, of course, there's always a caveat to that because, you know, they only look at convictions. And if somebody, you know, has managed to swerve the police and they haven't been convicted of anything, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are 100% safe. It just means that they haven't been caught. So we always say trust your gut instinct. And if something doesn't feel right, then it's not right. It's not right for you, and you should get yourself out of there.
Yeah, I guess if they're even calling you, then there's something that's not quite telling
you.
And the Clare's Law thing, that's anonymous, isn't it?
No, he wouldn't be told that you'd requested that information from the police, no.
I don't know how many people know about that.
Still not a lot of people know about it, and it's been around for years now. But it's, again, it's one of these things that gets a bit of publicity and then people forget about it, so you have to keep talking about it. But it can be really useful for people sometimes to just have that validation and that concrete black and white evidence that actually, yes, this person has been abusive in the past. Because we know abusive people lie, you know. They're very manipulative and they can come up with all sorts of excuses about why they can't see their children, or, you know, this ex-partner that was mad, and, you know, and kind of really, you know, shift the blame and, like I say, manipulate and make excuses for things that have happened in the past. But
the whole it's not me, it's you, everybody else.
Yeah, it's always somebody else's fault.
They're the victim. So for anyone who is listening and thinks they might be in an abusive relationship, is that what you'd say to them? Trust your instincts, call
100%.
Us.
No, you know, oh gosh, we talk about the gut instinct all the time and it's so powerful, and we do ignore it, you know, to the detriment of ourselves sometimes, because you want to believe the good in people, right? You don't want to believe that somebody is intentionally hurting you, whether that's emotionally or physically or whatever else. You know, you want to believe the good in people, but if you dismiss that gut instinct, you know, you probably will regret it further down the line. You know, if something feels wrong, yeah, you need to trust that gut instinct and educate yourself. You know, if you're not sure, go onto websites, look at the Women's Aid website, look at the Dash charity, speak to a professional confidentially, ask them, you know, how, if what you're thinking and how you're feeling is worth worrying about, right? They will tell you. They don't know you personally. They don't know your partner personally. They will give you a completely independent, objective, professional view on it. So if you're not sure, just ask. Just don't sit on it and dismiss it and hope and keep your fingers crossed that everything is going to be okay.
So, Karen, can you tell us what's the story behind you writing Recognition to Recovery, How to Leave Your Abusive Ex behind for good?
Okay, so this came about because most people that are in abusive relationships don't actually realise that they're in abusive relationships. For a lot of people, that behaviour is very subtle. It's what we call coercive and controlling behaviours. So it's a lot of very subtle behaviours, and it kind of creeps in over time. So you don't actually realise that it's happening to you until you either get to a crisis point or you get this general realisation and realise that someone's got to change. And then you reach out for some kind of help some way or another. And then you just kind of figure it out yourself, or you go and get some proper professional support. And I just thought, I know that there's great support and help out there for people when they're out, you know, when they want to leave an abusive relationship. But the people that need to know about that don't get to know about it until much later on. So I thought, what can I do? I know, I'm going to put it in a book. So people can pick up the book. And if they are thinking that they are in an abusive relationship, they can pick up the book, they can read about it, they can recognise some of those behaviours, they can read about how you leave an abusive relationship, those practical, tangible steps that you can take in a safe way. They can read other excerpts from other clients that I've supported over the years, you know, things that they've said and, you know, their experiences. And maybe they will realise that they're not alone, and it will give them that confidence, that courage to take that next step to get out of that abusive relationship. So that's the recognition part of it. And then the recovery part of it, again, is those tangible strategies that help you in the immediate aftermath of leaving, but then also the longer term stuff. Because once you're out of an abusive relationship, it doesn't necessarily mean that that abuse stops. And sometimes the emotional impact becomes more obvious later on. So you need some practical strategies. How do you communicate with an ex-partner who is abusive towards you when you've still got children together? You know, how do you stop them impacting on your life as you start to recover? Because you want to move on, right? Afterwards. You know, that was the whole point of getting out of this abusive relationship. So you have to learn how to manage your ex, if you like. You know, your ex isn't going to change, might still be in your life for the next few years. But what you can do is you can create some really firm boundaries. You can work on yourself to get yourself stronger. And so if you follow these kind of bite-sized tips in the book, the things that have worked for me, I know they work. They worked for me and they've worked for lots of other people in these kind of situations, then it's going to help you. It's going to help you recover much quicker. And you can go to the book, and at the back there's a glossary. So if you're having a wobbly day, you can go to the back of the book and you can go, right, what do I need to do now? Right, I know, I need to do my ABC and then I need to focus on that because that's going to help me. Or maybe I need to, I don't know, maybe I need to reread this section to just remind myself, actually, of what I'm dealing with. So it's the kind of book that hopefully you can dip in and out of as and when you need it. Because, you know, some of my clients come to me, you know, and they're 4 or 5 years on after leaving their abusive relationship. But every now and again, they have a wobble, right? So they can dip in and out of this and go, actually, yeah, I know what I need to do now. I know. I've got that strategy. I've got it in the bag. And then I can move on again.
So it's like having your own mini Karen in your handbag.
Yeah, it is. It is. And lots of people that have read the book have said to me, oh, my God, it's like my life in this book. Like, how did you know my life inside out? And it's really easy to read. There's no jargon in it. It's not about my life story because this book isn't about me. But there's bits in there about, you know, my experience. But this is really about getting through it and getting out the other side and realising that, yeah, domestic abuse is horrible. It's a horrible experience and nobody should ever have to go through it. But if you are going through it, you can get out of it and you can come out the other side and be stronger, and you can really have a happy life afterwards. You absolutely can. You know, I'm proof. There's lots of people that I talk about in this book, and, you know, all my clients, they're proof that you can come out the other side and be happy. Yeah, it doesn't have to define you. It shapes you, but it doesn't have to define you. That's my mantra.
Good mantra. You're an author, an advocate, a coach, and a pretty extraordinary human being.
Oh, bless you.
What's next for Karen Kipping?
Oh, gosh. Supporting more clients, I suppose, sadly, in some ways. But, yeah, I'm just really looking forward to growing personally as and professionally as a coach, and helping more people, doing more of things like inspirational talks, supporting people from different backgrounds. I've got other things in the pipeline in terms of different types of support for people, because I want to be able to help people in different ways. Sometimes coaching isn't for everybody, for various reasons. So I'm looking at other ways that I can support them too. So there'll be more blogs, more podcasts, more different ways, different things that I'm going to be doing in the future. And maybe even I might write another chapter of a book. I don't know.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Karen. It's been great chatting with you. I'm sure everyone's learned a lot from your story. And for everybody out there, please tune into our next podcast. Thank you for listening.